Hello, this is Rob Jacobson with the April 21, 2025 edition of the News Gazette. We'll start this morning with the two articles on the front page of the paper. The headline article by Dave Hinton is entitled "Name Dropping Stars of the Stage: St. Thomas Teacher Fits His School Plays to Students' Personalities." No need to worry about copyright infringement when St. Thomas Catholic School stages its annual junior high spring play, not with the play's author on staff. Teacher Eric Miller writes the Philo School's play each year, and he takes it seriously, penning the work the summer before and crafting the roles to the students who will be performing. He writes it to each of the kids' personalities, Principal Jean Cothran said. The kids love it. That's what makes the plays so awesome. Cothran said Miller is a natural announcer as well. He MCs the school's trivia night and puts together each pep assembly. Just about anything fun, Mr. Miller is involved, Cothran said. Miller has been crafting the labor of love for 12 years. Not only is he the author, he's also the director. This year's production, Princess Sleepover, will be presented May 2nd. The play starts, as the title suggests, with a sleepover. The girls in one part of the building and the boys in the basement, Miller said. The boys start plotting to mess up the girls, Miller said. One of the girls didn't get invited because she was kind of a queen bee, telling the other girls what to do all the time. They're reading fairy tales. They read a magical spell during a storm. They get sent to medieval times, and the queen bee is ruling. Miller said he gets his ideas from a variety of places. For one, he's the kind of person newspaper editors like. He likes to read. For another, he watches a lot of movies. I'll be sitting at home watching a movie and say, "That's a fun theme," Miller said. "Sometimes I think of different lines I would find funny." Every year, it seems, he writes a few lines he thinks will get laughs, but they don't come. Other times, lines he thinks are throwaway lines get hearty chuckles. Go figure. I go over three or four of my ideas with seventh graders, and I try to get as much written over the summer as possible. Most of the productions are comedies in some way. One was a mystery. Gauging audience reaction, I don't feel like as many people were as engaged in the mystery, Miller said. I try to bring humor into all of them. Miller didn't grow up dreaming of becoming a playwright. Really, I was just interested in theater, going and watching plays. At Eureka College, where he attended, he was part of a school play, but doesn't remember the name. I enjoy writing and reading things that I think will make good shows. I lean more heavily into fantasy, thriller kind of things. His reading material ranges from old to new. He recently read an Agatha Christie novel, The Big Four. I try to watch a movie every night or every other night. I don't stick to one genre. I like different things, different interactions with people. Prior to fitting and writing roles, Miller asks students to grade themselves from 1 to 10 to get an idea of what kind of role they would like to have in the play and how much they want to talk. I tell them, if you want to be a Broadway star, you give me a 10 out of 10. If you want to be backstage, give me a 1 to a 3. Some students surprise him. I have had some over the years who are shy and they still want to be in a main part. They give me an 8 score. Or students participate in class but are never the most outgoing. But once they're on the stage, they're a whole different person. This year, the majority of the 8th graders are the main cast members, Miller said. One is stage manager, and the young ones are crew and minor characters. There's always a job to fit their willingness to participate. Our main cast this year has 12 or 13 students. Originally from the Morton area, he lives in Philo with his wife Danielle and their 3 sons, ages 10, 7, and 11 and a half. Actually, on 1 and a half, excuse me. He majored in secondary education with a specialization in history at Eureka College. I always saw myself teaching high school age students, but enjoy teaching middle school students, a tough gig for many teachers. When he tells people he teaches middle school, he often gets an, "Oh, bless your heart," Miller said with a laugh. He believes a Catholic school education is a good option. I went to a Catholic school in Morton through 8th grade, he said. When you're with the same 10 to 15 kids for 8 to 12 years, a person can form lasting friendships. Behavior-wise, what I see online and people posting stuff about other schools, I'm blessed we don't have to deal with behavior issues. Kids get their work done and parents are supportive. Miller teaches 6th through 8th grade history, 8th grade math, and 8th grade religion. He's also the 8th grade homeroom teacher. The school has 38 junior high students. Next, the other front page article for today is entitled Thriving Honey Business Born Out of Pandemic. Owner Jessica Trefsker is surprised by the success of the Hive Honey Boutique's business in Mahomet. It's been a rapid ascent. I tell people all the time that this is a wild horse, and I'm white-knuckling holding onto the reins, Trefsker said. The business is a direct result of the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020. She was placed on furlough from her physical therapy job at Christie Clinic. Trefsker and her husband John had a 3-year-old and a 6-month-old and needed some income she had been making. We decided to lean more into the honey business, she said. Jessica Trefsker started small with a couple of beehives and began selling produce at the Mahomet Market. The Hive moved into its first brick-and-mortar location in November 2021. Last May, the business became part of the ever-expanding commercial scene in East Mahomet at 1828 Patton Drive, Suite 2. On Tuesday, the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce will hold a ribbon cutting from noon to 12:30 p.m. to celebrate the boutique's expansion into the Patton District. The business's grand reopening is set from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on May 11. The new location is part of Tabling Development's Vision South Development along US 150. The Hive offers raw local honey, bath and body products, home decor, apparel, hands-on workshops, and a tasting room. The expansion includes a new commercial production kitchen where the Hive will begin producing honey fusions, handcrafted tea blends, honey candles, honey butter, and the signature charcuterie boards and cups, which is a honey-inspired twist on traditional charcuterie. The enhanced tasting room will also feature samples every Sunday. From their two lives in 2020, the Trefskers now have, or from their two hives, excuse me, in 2020, the Trefskers now have 40 hives at 4 locations in Mahomet. She said it was scary to start a new business in the midst of a pandemic. Sometimes you just got to go for it, she said. Christie Clinic called her 4 months after she was furloughed to see about her returning, but I said I was just going to see where this goes. She's glad she did. We keep building brick by brick. We still have so many ideas, but we're just doing one thing at a time. The Hive moved from its first brick-and-mortar location of about 700 square feet to its current one of about 3,000 square feet. She said the public has embraced the business. We're getting a lot of good feedback about the new offerings, Trefsker said. Now we have over 20 honeys that you can taste for free every day. She said some people use the honeys to combat seasonal allergies. We even have people use it for their dogs, she said. We get really good feedback from people who struggle with pollen allergies. Moving on to more local news. All 4 on board killed, small plane crash in Illinois. A single-engine plane crashed in a field in central Illinois on Saturday, killing all 4 people on board. Coles County Coroner Ed Schneiers said the victims were 2 women and 2 men. They were Ross Nelson, 46, Ramey Rundle, 45, Courtney Morrow, 36, and Michael Morrow, 48, all of Menominee, Wisconsin. The Cessna C-180G airplane went down shortly after 10 o'clock a.m., near the unincorporated community of Trilla, the National Transportation Safety Board said via email. Preliminary information indicated that it struck power lines, the NTSB said. Terrible news out of Coles County, Governor J.B. Pritzker said on social media, adding that his administration is monitoring the situation as we keep those impacted by the plane crash in our thoughts today. Moving on to state news, an article entitled Illinois Juvenile Justice System. Bill would ban detention of kids 12 and under. In more than two decades as a juvenile probation officer in downstate Clinton County, Carla Steinecker said barely a handful of children younger than 12 have found themselves in her office, and only a small number of those were put in a detention center. But the juvenile justice veteran thinks it's time to phase out that option. The old scared straight thing, that doesn't work, Steinecker said. They want help. They're not hard and bitter about the system yet. Illinois doesn't allow children under 10 to be held in detention facilities, but last year there were about a dozen admissions of children under 12 and more than 60 of children who were 12 years old, according to data from the Illinois Juvenile Justice Commission. Cases like those are the subject of a bill that was passed in the state Senate last week that, if approved by the House and signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker, would essentially ban the detention of kids 12 and under, with some exceptions for 12-year-olds accused of certain violent crimes. The bill would do away with an option for youthful offenders that a report from the state's Juvenile Justice Commission described as, quote, potentially life-altering and disproportionately detrimental to black children. Advocates argue detention can add to trauma for children who, in many cases, have already experienced problems before they ever get into trouble with law enforcement, adding to risk factors that may lead them to act out again. Beyond that, younger children can be exposed to danger or negative influences from older teenagers in detention, or face potential issues from isolation if they're sequestered away for their own protection, said Patrick Keenan Devlin, executive director at the Moran Center for Youth Advocacy. But opponents say the change would place the onus for overseeing troubled young kids on an already overburdened social services infrastructure. The Illinois Sheriff's Association opposes the change, and its executive director, Jim Kaichik, questioned whether there are sufficient alternatives available to what is essentially jail for 10 or 11-year-olds accused of violent crimes. Who's going to take them, Kaichik asked, pointing as an example to the difficulty of the state's Department of Children and Family Services has in finding placements for hundreds of children in its care. That's the rub right out of the gate. The bill came together as an agreement between the Juvenile Justice Initiative, an Evanston-based advocacy group, and the Illinois Probation and Court Services Association, a professional organization that Steinecker leads. The legislation is also backed by the State Department of Juvenile Justice, spokesperson Dominique Newman said. In addition to raising the age that kids can be detained from 10 to 12, starting in mid-2027, the bill would also raise the standard for 12-year-olds to be detained to those accused of specific violent crimes, including first-degree murder, aggravated criminal sexual assault, some instances of battery involving guns, and aggravated carjacking. The bill would also allow the Juvenile Justice Commission to study the possibility of further raising the minimum age to 14 and make recommendations on services that can be used as alternatives to detention. Detention for any amount of time can be detrimental to juveniles, and the youngest ones are in an especially critical period, said Sarah Thomas, a research assistant professor at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, who studies adolescent development. Juveniles incarcerated for any amount of time, on average, only achieved 5 out of 8 measures of basic success in a recently published years-long study co-led by Thomas, including in areas such as earning a high school degree, holding a job, and maintaining a social support system. Those outcomes generally got worse the longer a person was incarcerated, even among those who started with similar risk factors, she said. The study focused on more than 1,800 youths sampled at intake at the Cook County Juvenile Temporary Detention Center in the 1990s, and it didn't differentiate between different ages of detained youth. Adolescents, and especially younger adolescents' brains, are so uniquely sensitive to their social environments, and incarceration during that period of time is profoundly disruptive to their development, Thomas said in an interview. It sets kids up to have long-term consequences that follow them into adulthood. And at the youngest ages, that are the subject of the pending legislation, a disproportionate number of black children are detained, the Juvenile Justice Commission found in its 2021 report on the issue. While about 15% of children statewide are black, they made up more than two-thirds of detention admissions for 10 to 12-year-olds in 2019, the report said. Still, the bill that would end detention for that age group has faced opposition from people who say social services that could be used as alternatives are strained or unsuitable for some children. Law enforcement doesn't overutilize its ability to detain children, and taking the option off the table could put other children in the community in danger, Kaichik of the Sheriff's Association said in an interview. I'm not pleading with you to say, I want to lock up all these kids. I don't, he said. I want services available to them. The Senate passed the bill 33-17 with two Republicans voting in favor and a handful of lawmakers sitting it out. If it's brought to a roll call in the House, it will likely follow a vote that saw moderate Democrats defeating a measure related to resentencing reform last week. Next, also a local column, Jim Dye's column, that covers a number of local matters. First portion of the article, non-walking wounded. Two area Illinois House members, Democrats Carol Ammons of Urbana and Sue Scherer of Decatur, are on the disabled list. Ammons, an Urbana Democrat, is using a wheelchair and crutches to get around because she suffered a torn meniscus, according to the office spokesman Grant Chassie. Medical experts say that, like many knee injuries, a meniscus tear is a painful, debilitating, and common injury often associated with athletics. The meniscus is described as a piece of cartilage in your knee that cushions and stabilizes the joint, acting as a shock absorber to protect the bones from wear and tear. Chassie said Ammons started having a problem a couple of weeks ago and that she's waiting to hear from doctors about what steps to take to address the problem. He said she is using crutches and a wheelchair for pain relief. While Ammons has managed to continue her work, Scherer, a former school teacher, is home recovering from a serious April 1 automobile accident that left her with broken vertebrae in her back. The accident occurred around 8 o'clock a.m. April 1 at a street intersection in northwest Decatur. Scherer told police she did not remember what happened, but authorities said she drove her car into the intersection and was struck by another vehicle. The next portion of this article, Republican lawyer in jam. A state lawyer disciplinary panel has recommended that a former Republican candidate for Illinois Attorney General be suspended from his law practice for 6 months. Thomas DeVore was cited for a variety of violations of lawyer conduct rules that included engaging in a conflict of interest and a sexual relationship with a current client. DeVore, a downstate lawyer, was the 2022 GOP candidate for Attorney General. He was defeated by incumbent Democrat Kwame Raoul. DeVore also made a lot of news and noise by filing lawsuits that challenged the restrictions put in place by Governor J.B. Pritzker during the coronavirus pandemic. In recent days, he has been active in GOP politics on behalf of some of the party's more conservative elements who oppose Republican House Leader Tony McCombie. The misconduct charges against DeVore stem from his personal and professional relationship with female client Riley Gaines. DeVore reportedly represented her in a divorce and went into the hair care business with her before they had a falling out. The final decision on lawyer discipline issues is made by members of the Illinois Supreme Court. The disciplinary case is prosecuted by lawyers from the state's Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission and defended by the accused lawyer. A three-member lawyer hearing panel reviews evidence, hears witnesses, and decides if disciplinary action is required. As a practical matter, the High Court follows the panel's recommendations. The next portion of this article, Hoosiers are/aren't coming. The Chicago Tribune reported this week that Hoosiers who want a piece of Illinois are on the move. Too bad they won't get anywhere. Nonetheless, legislation on the Illinois-Indiana border question has passed both of Indiana's chambers and went to Governor Mike Braun, who quickly signed it. A spokesman said the legislation intends to show the Braun administration wants to work hand-in-hand with the General Assembly to build a pro-growth, pro-freedom, taxpayer-friendly state, the most in the whole country. Here in Indiana, Illinoisans have noticed the stark contrast, and they want freedom, a pro-opportunity, pro-business state. The law would establish a rule for a two-state boundary commission that theoretically would allow Illinois counties to join Indiana. Governor J.B. Pritzker has accurately called the proposal a stunt that isn't going anywhere because Illinois has no intention of participating in that discussion. But Indiana officials, and some in Illinois, continue to have a lot of fun with the issue at Pritzker's expense. There is extreme discontent in Illinois counties with the state's current governance. Illinois has 102 counties, 34 of which have voted to secede. But this protest movement is useful only for registering discontent to attract Pritzker's attention and that of state legislators. Next portion of the article, how does Billy Joel know? During her 2022 confirmation hearing, Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson cogently addressed questions put to her by members of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. But she professed to be at a loss when asked by Tennessee's Republican U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn to define what a woman is. The question of gender has come up in discussions about men competing in women's sports. It can produce the following exchange. Can I provide a definition? Jackson repeated the question. Yeah, Blackburn confirmed. I can't, Jackson replied. You can't? Blackburn asked. Not in this context. I'm not a biologist, Jackson said. The response by Jackson, the mother of two children identified as girls, created quite a media stir. Fortunately, the British recently provided an answer to this vexing question. AP reported last week that, in a judgment with far-reaching implications, the UK Supreme Court ruled on April 16 that a woman is someone born biologically female and that transgender women are excluded from that legal definition. It said the ruling was cheered by some feminists who have campaigned to safeguard rights for women on the basis of biological sex. Trans rights campaigners are disappointed and worry about the ruling's implications for transgender women. The decision, of course, raises a question. Presumably, the members of Brit's Supreme Courts are, like Jackson, lawyers, not biologists. So, how were they able to come up with a definitive answer to such a polarizing question? Next portion of the article. Big win for dopers. The Illinois Senate last week approved legislation that restricts the ability of police officers who smell marijuana during a traffic stop to search the vehicle. It did so by eliminating the statutory requirement that a motorist possessing marijuana store it in an odor-proof container. Consumption of marijuana for recreational use is legal in Illinois, but legislators initially sought to discourage those intoxicated by marijuana from getting behind the wheel by requiring it be transported in odor-proof containers. But the law generated confusion and conflicting court decisions. One appellate court ruled that mere smell alone is insufficient to justify a search because marijuana is legal and the odor can be generated in a variety of ways that do not involve in-car consumption or intoxicated driving. Another ruled that a violation of the odor-proof requirement rule is grounds to allow authorities to investigate further and, depending on what is discovered, make arrests. While jettisoning the odor-proof rule, the law requires cannabis to be kept in a sealed or reusable and child-resistant container that is inaccessible. The question, of course, still remains, how will an officer be able to check the container issue if he can't act on what his nose tells him? Local State Senator Chapin Rose, a Mahomet Republican, objected to the change by citing how it conflicts with suspected alcohol violations. We would never, ever ask a police officer to disregard the odor of alcohol when they pull a car over. Why on earth would we ask a police officer to disregard the odor of cannabis? At a minimum, they should have a duty to ensure that the driver is not impaired, he said. And the last portion of Jim Dye's column for today, author suited for any pseudo-intellectual. Book recommendations are the usual fare in this space. Today is different. It's time to celebrate an author whose works are consistently excellent, well worth the time of general interest readers. He's Jonathan Eig, E-I-G, who wrote King, A Life. This masterpiece was recommended in last week's column. King is Eig's sixth book. His previous biography of boxing champion Muhammad Ali and Chronicle of Jackie Robinson's groundbreaking first year as a Brooklyn Dodger are both outstanding. One other highly acclaimed work is Luckiest Man, The Life and Death of Lou Gehrig. Although three of his books concern sports figures, they will appeal to more than tunnel-visioned fans. They are loaded with recitations of social history and insights into popular culture of the time. It's no accident Eig's books are winners. Readers won't be disappointed when and if they check them out. Going back to some more local news, the short column entitled Top of the Morning, and it's called Grabbing a Bite with Joey Wright. Thule's Cafe in Oakwood celebrated a happy anniversary on April 13. The town's newest dining option has been open for just over a year to plenty of excited responses from the community. Our goal is to be a diner-type restaurant, but like the old mom-and-pops, General Manager Jim Sisko said, adding the restaurant sources local ingredients whenever it can. Sisko credits a helpful staff with making the restaurant's first year a success. Seems that the business is picking up, Sisko said. Almost every week we're doing a little better than the week before. Tweaks are being made as needed at Thule's as the restaurant settles into its groove. Sisko says that Mexican-inspired features have been added to the menu to positive reception, and Thule's, located near Interstate 74, aims to be a shining example for locals and travelers alike. We want to promote the community to travelers, Sisko said, and we want to service the community. We're sitting in the middle of three truck stops, and we want to be a good option for the truckers, too. In other local news, New York artist enjoys Allerton Park stay. Allerton Park and Retreat Center had another artist on site, the 20th of its 6-year-in-residence program. Patrick Neal generally uses oil and watercolor to show his processes in his works, which include a wide range of subjects portrayed in colorful, impressionistic ways. The painter, who also writes prolifically about art, says he often goes into a session with one thing in mind, only to paint something different. That had him excited about being on site at Allerton through Friday. I love this idea of subject matter arising by way of an occasion. I find that exciting about Allerton Park, in a different place outside the confines of your own home or studio that you know very well, and you're dealing with new terrain and new people, Neal said. The East Coast artist feels that everything can be something rich for art, from staircases near his home to landscapes out in nature. Strengthening that belief was a 2022 residency in Costa Rica, where he painted not only the scenic cloud forests, but the cultural components of the country. His method also incorporates a moment-by-moment attitude. It often comes from collecting moments, said Neal. I just walk out the door, and there are subject matters. He also enjoys discussing his art with others. I want to be able to talk to everybody. Not so much showing them pretty pictures as much as talking about the artistic processes and why I am arriving at these motifs, he said. And finally, to finish our first half hour, a very short local notice. William Golden III was selected April Star of the Month at Hawthorne Inn in Danville. He was chosen by the management team for the excellent job he does as part of the dietary department. Nominators said he's a great cook, fills in for different shifts, is very friendly with our staff members, and helps keep the kitchen clean. As a result, he was awarded the Hawthorne Inn Star of the Month. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of the April 21, 2025 edition of the News Gazette.